with our guest, Michael Tesserian, Architects of Control. They're not controlling you, are they? Think about that. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Michael Tesserian. Michael, is there a trigger date that they'd like to get all this completed by? Is there a deadline involved here?
Yeah, the 2012, of course, jumps to mind. And people have predicted that that, you know, will be the end of mankind or whatever. It's not that. It's not the end of the world. It's the end of a way of living. It's also, as we pointed out in the DVD, it's the end of man as he knows himself currently. It might actually be a time when some more esoteric type things happen. For instance, we've talked a lot, especially at the end of Disc 2, about the ego. And does the ego, like a cell or like a body or like a human life, does it have a life cycle? The Vedic system, if people get into the Vedic system, they talk about, you know, the days and the life of the god Brahma, and they often insist that even the gods have a certain life cycle. And it's a very fascinating concept. You know, it takes a long time to go into, but basically I've tied it in with astrology and also psychology. And when you do that, you come up with this incredible theory. There's an amazing story there about the ego itself having a particular death day so that it will perish and be reborn again. This ties in with my reading of the 2012 concept that not only is one kind of humanity, you know, going, hopefully it won't be, it won't mean that it's the alien side of us that's going to become, or the technological side of us that will become into ascendancy. I hope that that won't happen. But could it also be that the ego itself, on a collective and a physical, on a personal level, has this sort of life cycle that it terminates completely? And is that what the, you know, the Piscean age and the Aquarian concept and all of this is about? You know, it's really fascinating stuff there.
You know, we've been, as humans, under control since the beginning of mankind. I mean, civilizations have been controlled by their rulers, by their emperors, by their kings, both with fear and everything. You know, the guy who controlled the army or the military ended up controlling the entire kingdom. And in this particular case, we happen to have a magnificent country where I believe the military, if it ever got to that point, would not turn on Americans. At least I hope so, if that they would not. Do you think they would, Michael?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think that they're what they. If you look back at some of the atrocities that have happened, like the way they brought down jet airplanes filled with generals, and the way that they, even in the police force and the army, they sort of filter out these more human type of people, and they replace them with these sort of, you know, servants of the neocons or whatever you want to call it. It's fascinating too that the neocons even refer to themselves as Vulcans, which, by the way, ties into a technological reading. This is kind of fascinating. But yeah, to answer your question, I think they are afraid of that because, remember, there's been many times in different countries where that has, in fact, happened. The military have aided the people as opposed to turned against them. And because they know this, these politician types know this, so they weed out the good guys. You know, they weed out these patriotic, truly patriotic and well-informed individuals in exactly the same way they weeded out the governors and the mayors of the individual states of America and put in their little federalist, you know, cronies. Mm-hmm. To make sure that, you know, things will run exactly the way they want them to run, you know.
Let's take some calls while we chat. Dustin in Metamore, Illinois, you're on with Michael Tesserian. Go ahead, Dustin.
Thank you, gentlemen. Mine's really kind of a comment. I went to a concert a few months ago, and it was a band named Head P, and they were promoting this truth movement about the Illuminati and shadow government, throwing all these keywords around. And I had a sense that, I'm going to use this term, it seems like these punks, these punk kids are, you know, they're getting mad over what they don't understand. And it seems like they're being programmed, as you've been talking about revolting against the government. And I don't think it's necessarily the government, as you guys have been talking about, that's behind the whole ordeal. And I just kind of wanted to throw that out there.
This is more like the shadow government, Michael. This is what, you know, Alex Jones has always called the puppeteers and the puppet masters.
Yeah, and I think what Austin is also picking up on is that they have already seeded the youth culture with a lot of disinformationalistic bands who will help to siphon off the immediate feeling of anxiety and rebelliousness. This is done over and over again, and it's almost you can't point to a band today in today's world, especially in the top 40, that isn't in some way either blatantly Luciferian, necrophiliac, and all the rest of it, or, as Austin is implying, misinformed themselves. I mean, some, of course, are doing their best. They feel they've picked up on a piece of information. They want to run with it. There's nothing wrong with that. Oh, but some are actually, you know, really almost fifth columnists, you know, who are put out there to sort of Pied Piper people along a certain road in order to mislead them. You know, I mean, there are great bands out there like Agent Steel and Gamma Ray and other bands who are really on top of this, you know, like Creator from Germany, who really have it down. They've really done their homework and they know what they're talking about. But that, again, takes research. It takes diligence, you know. And that type of knowledge will not be found. What you will have is what Austin's talking about. You'll find a lot of label reading, and you'll have a lot of knee-jerk reaction within that movement. Or you just have this complete left-right thing again, where they just sit on a talk show, you know, and just bash each other with this left-right verbiage, which doesn't even strike at the heart of it at all, like he's saying.
40, 50 years ago, we had massive conflict in this country. You know, there was rebellion. I mean, these were the 60s, yeah. For example, Michael, were incredible times in this country. It seems different now. Protest seems different. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but it's not the same. It's not what it was like 40 or 50 years ago when protest was trying to get things done. Now it's different. Do you feel
I know that? Yes, I do. And I also know that many people, I'm not one of them, of course, but there are many of the left-wing activists of the time who are now, you know, a little older, and they've stood up. As even a famous actor, I can't remember, I just watched a great thing, I put it on my forum, where he was not lamenting about the lack of progress. In fact, he was talking about that we should be glad that there is a lot of progress. But he was also stressing what you've stressed, and that he was asking a question, you know, as what has become of man, given all that ardor, you know, of the Kent State and the anti-Vietnam wars and the rallies against Watergate, and the tremendous exposure of that, you know, that there was great successes there, and the tremendous hoopla around the death of, you know, John F. Kennedy and so forth and so on. And there was a lot of free thought then, back then, you see, if you want to call it that. There's also a lot of, you know, I was very glad to see in the 1970s a rise of psychology with Nathaniel Brandon and many other great works out there, you know, that started to delve into man as the psychological animal. You know, you have the Hidden Persuaders, books by Vance Packard about man being manipulated by Madison Avenue, you know. And we don't really have that same thing as much today from that psychological aspect. However, again, I can't be totally pessimistic, because after 9/11, look at the amount of, you know, books there were looking into what government was again, and a little bit of a refresher course for people, you know, looking at this kind of these questions. So I often say that, you know, 9/11 may have shaken people up, but did it really waken people up? But don't forget that these waking up processes also take quite a long time. It's not really rational to expect it to happen in 5 minutes. We're talking about millions of people who never once in their whole life even questioned the status quo. We're not talking about, you know, the listeners of Coast to Coast or the people that, you know, follow my work. They're already seasoned, let's say, in the past, you know, and they're up to speed on certain things. But we're talking about the masses of people, 300 million people or more, who've been growing up on just what they show on television, you know, as well, you know. So it does take a little bit of time, but I believe that people are really asking some very serious questions today. And even the books that they're producing and the little YouTube things that they're producing really give me a lot of hope, you know.
How do we deprogram ourselves? How do we fight the control? What do we do?
Go to the right teachers. And for me, that's always the Jungs and the Freuds and the, you know, Wilhelm Reichs and even the Ayn Rands. Go to the right kinds of teachers. That doesn't mean believe everything they say. That doesn't mean that they're right. But we need to look at man as the individual of who he really is in sort of a distinction, you know, from his roles, from all of the things that he's bought into, because as you said earlier on, he's concerned about his security. And that's fine. We're not saying leave the roles. We're just saying realize you're in those roles, but you are something else. You're a dharmic being. You are a potential light worker. You know, you are a potential master of your own life. You're a priest and priestess of your own existence. Start looking into that. Feel the confidence. Find your selfhood again. Stop making other people dependent on you and stop becoming dependent on others. Examine the anxieties. You talked earlier on about the tremendous level of fear that exists in the world. Well, there's fear. That's from external things. And then there's anxiety, which is a man's insecurity about his own nature, his own being. And as we said, because of this colonizing power of monarchy and autocracy, you know, man has been shaken to the foundations. He's a mutilated, his psyche is mutilated. So he needs to start looking back. And, you know, we all know we got two legs, two arms, and a head. Anyone can tell you the anatomy of the physical body. What is the anatomy of thinking? What is thought? Who's thinking about thought? You know, there's a whole anatomy of the mind. There's a whole anatomy of consciousness that needs to be, again, reviewed.
When I was a kid growing up in Detroit, I remember my father. He would go into work. He worked for Ford Motor Company. We had a small little house, which they still own. They bought it in 1958. I moved in there, you know, with them when I was 8 years old. We had even a smaller house before that. I remember that if we went out at all, it was in a family setting. We went to see relatives, or we went to a little place for dinner. But I always remember him being home. Very rarely do I remember him just leaving, and we were there with my mother, or we were there by ourselves. Later on in life, when we got older, you know, the two of them would go out and they'd come back and stuff like that. But some things happened to the family too, I think, that has had a drastic effect on this entire scheme that's falling all over the place. And it's as if everybody's been separated to the point. And I think they did that on purpose too.
Oh, there's no doubt, but there's been a tremendous war against not only the simple pleasures and the simple morals. I mean, it's a moral war. When I talk about the war on consciousness, we're talking about an all-out war against virtue, against standards. Ayn Rand said that the man who cannot see evil as evil eventually will not even be able to see good as good. In other words, his entire moral base will be shattered. There'll be so many splinter groups and fringe sects and so many belief systems, and so much stimuli that the mind will literally freeze and shut down. And this is what's happening to the teens, you know, not only with the medication and everything else, and the mercury and what have you, but it literally is the overstimulization. And then they put up false models on the usual sitcoms and television programs that you start to slowly identify with. First, you laugh at it, think it's silly, and then next thing, you're identifying with it. And that colors your own personal life. And you divorce your, you know, the divorced person, right? The person who is less of a self. I mean, we've been talking about the mechanized man, the technocratic man. That is a humanless man. And so a man who's lost his own reason, who's lost his own humanity, can hardly treat his neighbors or his children in a human way. He doesn't even see them as people or persons anymore. He sees them as a possession. In other words, he becomes a little tyrant in his own family unit, as the big brother is the tyrant over him. He ceases to relate to his own children or his wife or his, you know, husband as a person. And it's just an appendage. It's a piece of furniture. And this is what is happening. Then, of course, the teens will rebel against that because they demand to be treated as people. And when they're not, then they will become fractured and fragmented and apathetic, as we see them being today. And it's the loss of the core values which these Fabians and these, you know, ministers of the British Crown and whoever else you want to put in the picture here have been working wonders through their different institutes, of which many I could name, in this country and throughout the whole world. The whole world is becoming globalized. We were shooting in the Balkans. Part of our film was shot in Macedonia and also in the Serbia in the earlier part of this year. And we saw the same thing there. We saw the same dehumanization there and the same sort of corporatization of the entire world and the same psychopathy. So it's not just, you know, common to one country. It's all over the world. It's becoming this way.
All right, let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys tonight?
Good, Sherry.
Oh, my gosh. I had a two-part question for you, but I think I've changed my question a little bit after listening. Where are we headed? Who's behind this? And how do we stop it?
Well, Jerry, that's a, you know, very deep question. And, you know, I think that it's very, very important for us to start to examine how we personally bring about, each individual brings about the kind of life that they experience, because it really is a subjective thing. And the miracle, we're not seeing that the sorcerers who rule us, right, have made sure that we lose sight of the magic, if you allow me to use those terms. There's the magic, and then there's the sorcery of life. And they are sorcerers. They are possessed. They're very, you know, they talk a lot about order, but they are the most disorganized people psychically or spiritually, if you want to call it, and morally. And they want the world to be in a state of chaos because they feel good in that state, you see? And they want us to also follow suit. So just like Joseph Campbell said, you have to find your bliss. You have to find the magic starting with your own life. You have to breathe deeply. You have to look at the light. You have to enter into relationships with knowledge, not just gain knowledge. You have to love the adventure of gaining knowledge about this. See it as a journey. You know, go into the dark places, turn on the light and get familiar with that. Get familiar with the knowledge and become articulate and also eloquent in it. And see it as a beautiful journey, not as a chore. And turn the light on in your own life. This is fundamental. And when you do that, you will find your guides. You will find the guidance, and you will find the guide, and you will find a new sense of selfhood. So it's not about political action at all, in my reading. Of course, if there's another person you're talking to, they'd say something different. But as far as I'm concerned, it's about totally know thyself. It's so old, it's new. You know what I'm saying? And that's basically what it's about. It's about discovering why you are here on this planet, what your true purpose is, and how you really cannot change good or evil. Those are realities, and they'll be here after you're gone, and they were here before we were born. But what you can change is your attitude towards those realities. You can change your perception of them and your attitude towards those things. And that is a huge step, just doing that alone.
You talk about the elites have two different camps, and I like what you say here. One is they want to keep mankind ignorant. They want to keep us stupid. And the other is they want us to accept this plan of theirs and to go along with the beat.
They have many camps, but they split into two main groups. There are those Orwellians and those Bertrand Russell School, Malthus, Thomas Hobbes types who just go, look, he's primitive. He's our creation. He's a genetic hybrid. Keep him in ignorance. Don't give him any perks. Keep him in a total state of servitude. And by the way, that's what they've been doing all through the previous ages of the earth. But then they have this other, quote-unquote, enlightened group of despots who go, no, we needn't do that. What we need to do is tutor them, educate them, condition them, colonize them, train them like dogs to accept our global village instead of chains of iron, chains of gold. And that's what this technological dystopia that's coming is basically that's what it is. It's another form of incarceration, but it's one in which you can live out your wildest fantasies. You can replicate the unconscious. You can have anything that you want at your disposal. You're still a slave, but we have made it smiling depressive. We're no longer going to keep you in a complete state of, you know, troglodytism. We're going to sort of give you a lot of, you know, we're going to put a lot of different distractions, the breads and circuses that these people like the Aldous Huxleys, you see, have basically said. And you get two choices. You know, it's like that policeman in England, they used to have the cop, you know, with the white armbands that steer the traffic.
Yeah.
And he'll block cars from going down one way where you're not meant to go down, but he'll wave traffic down another direction in which they want you to go. That's who they've employed. And the people's champions that work for these guys, that's what they're doing. They're saying, we will give you first-class tickets and a scenic route to your new prison.
Interesting analogy, Michael. We'll be back with more calls with Michael Tesserian on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take full phone calls with Michael Tesserian. The board's already lit. We'll take a few calls when we come back and continue chatting with him about Architects of Control. Michael, where do you get Architects of Control? People want to pick it up, and it comes in two sets, right?
The second program is in the works. The first program is out.
Okay.
Yep. It's a two-disc set. And we also have a special offer for the Coast to Coast listeners. Those who are interested in becoming a member of our Time Gnosis website, which is my numerological system, if they want to get that free, then they need to go to the Michael Tesserian website and just click on the Time Gnosis link and get the DVD and their free membership of Time Gnosis that way. Those who are not interested in Time Gnosis and just want the DVD, just head over to michaeltesserian.com and click instead on the Architects of Control link. So again, those who want to take me up on the offer of free membership of Time Gnosis, they can also get their DVD that way. Go to the Time Gnosis link on michaeltesserian.com. Those who don't, just go straight to the Architects of Control link on my Michael Tesserian website, or just type in architectsofcontrol.com. That's as simple as that.
Michael, at what age or what event made you realize that this control was happening? Something opened your eyes. What was it?
I had the general outline before I left Ireland, but until I bumped into people like Jordan Maxwell and people like G. Edward Griffin read their works, Eustace Mullins, you know, in other words, coming to America and listening to the, you know, reading the Webster Tarpleys. Like I said to Sherry earlier when she asked that great question, it's a journey. And I undertook that, you know, coming out of Ireland's no pleasant experience. Seeing these, you know, actions of imperialism and colonialism firsthand is a very frightening thing and a daunting thing. But you have to transform that. You have to, you know, like Joseph Campbell said, attached to the bliss, look at it as a journey of enlightenment. We talked earlier about it not being really separate from your journey of enlightenment. This is what it's all about. But it's not about gaining knowledge. It's about entering into a relationship with knowledge in the same way that you do when with a lover or with a very deep, intimate, you know, person in physical form. Well, knowledge is no different, you know. So for me, it was the journey of coming and listening to, you know, the Ralph Eppersons and the Dr. Stan Monteiths, you know, and many of the guests that, you know, have come on your show. And I'm still doing it. You know, I read 10 books a month, you know. I haven't reached the end. It's a continual journey, you know. But again, what I try to not do myself is tunnel vision. Like I said, I lay down. I try to get my arms around all of the information that I can, but then I lay it down and I revisit it again, or I go over here and I go over there, and I take the time because there are no shortcuts with this. This is a very deep matter. And to me, like you know, as I said, it happened early, but the pieces of the puzzle were not properly put in until I heard what Jordan had to say about astrotheology and about, you know, the mercantile banking, the whole idea of, you know, the maritime law and all of the things that he teaches.
Yeah.
And then, you know, going on to G. Edward Griffin and Eustace Mullins and so many other great, great teachers here, you know, who were really had the history. And I love that. I love the fact that they went back into time and that they also had a historical context, especially people like Lyndon LaRouche, you know, with the tremendous knowledge that he has about the ancestry going back into Italy and London and England, you know. And this really is fascinating to me because this architecture, the architects are reborn every 5 minutes. I mean, they always have a new coterie. But the architecture of control itself is very, very ancient, you know.
Do you agree that most people are good people?
Well, George Carlin said, if you think everybody's good, you haven't met everybody.
So, see, I do. I mean, I take that perspective that most individuals are good people.
Well, like I said to Sherry, or was it, Austin before that, that you can't change your... you can't change good and evil itself. You know, everyone has good and evil within them, even the worst person. And again, going back to psychology, what made them like that? Every single person who chooses to go towards the alien within them, it's a conscious choice. Everyone who wants to go towards the evil in them, it's a conscious choice. But it may have been some kind of primal wound that someone else inflicted upon them, you know, when they were young and innocent and good,
that
demented them and twisted them, you know. So again, the examination of that, if you don't get into it emotionally, then you start looking at it and you see, my goodness, something beautiful, something natural, something, you know, very, very pristine, and something ultimately perfect got warped, you know, by a particular primal trauma or a great, great sense of hurt that, you know, skewed a person from the right track. It's no different with humanity. So absolutely, people have good and evil within them. It's ludicrous to imagine otherwise. And of course, how can a person like me be talking endlessly about people doing their shadow work if I don't accept that I have a shadow, that, you know, we all have a shadow and we need to be looking at that? It goes without saying that, of course, we do have that shadow. We have to acknowledge it. That's the biggest problem of the world today, is that people refuse to do that. They rather project their shadow on the third world or on an enemy over there or any three-headed monsters that the government throws up to be rattling the gates of our security. You know, they know how to work with this. They know how to get us to project our own dark selves onto whoever the nemesis is for the particular season, you know, that these politicians want to bring it up.
How many of us, Michael, given the opportunity to be an elitist, to be a controller, to have the wherewithal to do whatever we want, how many of us would take advantage of that and do that, given an opportunity?
A good lot of people. But you see, even those who do take it up originally, they're only doing it because they were so artificially disempowered before, so you have to give them their moment of tyranny, so to speak. It's understandable why people become petty tyrants, is because, you see, they're, in a one way, it's born out of a virtue. They want power. And because power has replaced love. It's like I talk about this in an article I got called Weapons of Mass Destruction Found. When the person has been so mutilated and removed from their actual natural, organic, biological, spiritual, and moral power, moral, you know, inward power, they're going to crave the outward power that their parents had over them, that the teachers and the politicians and the priests have over them. They're going to identify with that, and some may take that power up, like those who go and commit corporate crime, for instance, you know, a stroke of a pen. The greatest crime that's done in this world isn't done with guns and weapons, or even with technology for that matter. It's done with a pen. It's done with the
bank. Look at Bernie Madoff. Look what he did.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, and then we might have a person who takes that up for a while before they regain their senses. Because the artificially deprived man, in one way, is not his own being. Of course he's going to go wherever he thinks the power and the success and the status is. You know, and so in some ways, it's lamentable. But it's because people are looking for that inherent sense of command and power over their own being, and because it's displaced into the world, and then it takes the form of having power over other people. And the more desensitized you are, and the more artificialized you are within yourself, you're, as I said before, you're hardly going to treat other people with humanness. My God, when you go in to get served at a place today, you can barely get a smile. You can barely get eye contact with people anymore. You know what I mean?
You got it. Let's go to Jim, Los Angeles. Hey, Jimmy, go ahead.
Hello. I just have a statement to talk about. It's in regards to the big media event that took place last week. It was a media manipulation, at least that's what I believe, the Balloon Boy story. Because while everybody was looking at the Balloon Boy story on national television, Governor Schwarzenegger signed a law into effect restricting ammunition sales. And also...
Well, but I don't think, Jim, that was the diversion. I think, as history will prove this right, the Balloon Boy story, they were taking advantage of us for some profit-making organization. But you're right about one thing.
Absolutely.
While that happened, you know, this other situation occurred.
Mm-hmm. At the exact same moment. And also, the atomic clock is in Fort Collins, Colorado. And that sets the time for the continental United States.
Well, you want to react to that, Michael? What do you think?
Well, it's funny that Jim should bring that up, because I was just tracking a debacle that happened in the BBC. I think it was like last year with Jonathan Ross or whatever it was, and another sort of pantomime setup, you know, that distracted everyone's attention from other news issues that were tremendously important at the time, you know, including the election of President Obama. So, you know, this other little nothing sort of media event was so publicized in the headlines. And it had to do with a chat show and some really perverse things that they were doing, you know, sort of like tongue-in-cheek, but then it got out of control, and then, you know, they publicized it all over the media, while monumental things were happening. So I do believe there's a tremendous amount of this diversionary thing going on, you know, all over the media, almost all the time.
Absolutely. We go next to New York, New York. Scott, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I really identify with what you're saying. This last era, at least from 81, is an amp up of Disraeli, Victoria's radical patriotism, the Khyber Pass campaign, then we got the whole supply side cycle on Bonk. It's really banks. I live here in New York. It's amazing what the divestment banks, as I call them, have done. And they basically banked us all out, and they've got nominal market control and obviously no credibility. We're negative $20 trillion. We're orbiting around a gravitational suckhole, not a sun star at this point. And their credibility is so maligned, I don't think it'll be long now. At the same time, they're calling on the kids. There are four generations of veterans in my family for duty on our country to go over there and protect their divested base from, you know, these higher capital-based Western jurisdictions. It's really amazing. Well, I appreciate you guys. Very nice show.
Well, good points, you know, and thank you for that. And you're right. We've got to realize that, you know, again, you were asking what, I think it was Sherry was asking what we can do about everything. Well, just simply, you know, watch what you're doing with your dollars and don't send your kids to die in wars, which, you know, America has absolutely no place to be in. You know, things, simple things like that might help.
Well, you know, in the mission gets foggy, and that's the unfortunate part of all of this, Michael. You know, you know, it's just very frustrating. Lakewood, Washington. Hello, Donna. Go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi.
George, wonderful show, wonderful guest. Mike, I love how your mind just ticks and goes, and you're just, it's like we're getting a peek into its absolute function right there, you know, as it comes in. I just love that. But I don't, there's just something, there's something about your theory or your hypothesis about our special traumatization that it's not sitting right with me yet. And just to let you know, my short history is that I'm of mixed race. I'm American. I'm rather dark, so it's easy to say I'm black. So I kind of understand some things with Obama, although my politics are very different. My view is very different than his framing. And what I find very interesting historically and currently in a common thread is the corporations on traumatizing cultures. Specifically, I was looking at the India Ink Company and all the terror that it ran on Africans and Pacific Islanders. I think Captain Cook or something like that. And I looked at the Catholic Church and the missionaries and how they interacted with the populations. And what the Africans was that they were traumatized. They were stripped of their language. They were stripped and mixed within themselves. Even to this day, Africa is considered a country, not a continent. You know, mm-hmm. People were dehumanized and commoditized, I guess, instantly. Now, I kind of see what's going on in our society nowadays happening in a slow factor, but it's the same, you know. And what you and George were dialoguing back and forth about what happened between the 60s and nowadays, I kind of compare that with what happened in the subculture of the black or African American community, where we congregate together basically because of the color of our skin, but we have as much cohesion and community together and right to identify ourselves as a group as what? Just because our skin color is the same? You see what I'm saying? And our history is very much, you got to dig so hard, you got to look up so many secrets and push so many things aside to find out something that matters that people want to talk about and to bring forward in the world. And what I wanted to play with was the threat of the Jews and their connection to the Bible, okay, is interesting to me for World War II, because here's a people who have been in exile for how many, you know, thousands of years, but have a portable culture, a portable language, have been literate, okay, have been pretty well pronounced in many of these different societies, have actually been the agitators to say, hey, we don't agree with that. Hey, that's wrong. You know, sometimes the first people to object, you know, to what was perceived to be against the norms or what have you, to the greater population. And
let's get Michael's reaction to this, because we're coming up to the top of the hour. Michael, overall, you know, she seems to be implying, without putting words in her mouth, that different cultures will react to different situations in different ways.
I couldn't agree more. And don't forget that within each race or whether each tribal movement, you have the shaman character or the wise one or the wise woman who sees the bigger picture. And then you have the rest of the people who are just completely, you know, subdivided. And when you go up to how the establishment figures work, they love to divide man from man, color from color, religion from religion. They've basically created or manufactured most of the divisionistic, you know, modes of expression that we can even point a finger at, particularly when it comes to religion. And they're experts at doing this, and they're experts at seeding the black community and the white community, you know, and the Asian community with their particular agents. I know exactly what buttons to push. And then what Donna was saying earlier about, you know, my concepts on how man has been traumatized, I must tell her, you see, that it is difficult to get your mind around it, because one thing is I talk about ancient trauma. We're talking about even pre-Diluvian, pre-flood era, and nobody else has really looked into that. You know, even the Julian Jameses and the great you know, biochemists and scholars of schizophrenia and the mind, who did know and do know that man's mind is traumatized, they stop at diagnosing what caused it. They just know that the man's psyche was destroyed, but they don't go into the original causes. But even if you don't, you know, buy into that, which is the ancient form of trauma, just look at even, you know, pretty much recent historical times and the sort of, you know, the decompartmentalization of the human psyche, just in recent times, even after the wars, you know, the First and Second World War, or say in the modern era. So we can see this in every era. You don't even have to go into the ancient, you know, understanding of it like I've done. I mean, you can just look at the kind of way that the media has done it, the way the children are today, you know, to see the effects of this. It's really quite outrageous how it's done. But she's absolutely right when it comes to this point. But again, I emphasize, never expect the whole of a mass to get the bigger picture. In fact, I would say that all my words, my teaching is not for everybody. I've said this before and I'll say it again. My words, my writings, my teachings are really not designed to really reach the masses. I've never deluded myself on that at all. They are for people who really know, you know, what they're looking at, for people who have got a very deep passion for a start, and for people who, you know, are willing to look at things in a quite a unique esoteric way and pretty much drop their particular prejudices in order to see things from a very, very different kind of way. But I never delude myself that, you know, it's for all of the people and they're all going to get it. It's for those individuals who understand utterly that they must find the reason of why they've been born, irrespective of their color, irrespective of their race, because those things don't interest me at all. What interests me is man in general as a psychological animal. All the other things, his roles, his race, his caste, his creeds, even his name, these are all imposed. They're all forms of colonialization. They're all in forms of impositions, you see, on the psyche, on the spirit of man. What is man essentially is the key. And the people who know what man is happen, unfortunately, to be some of the darkest leaders and misleaders in our world. That's what we've got to turn around. They're the ones who know what our hang-ups are, what our psychology is, you know, what our complexes are, what our syndromes are. And we need to get in touch with that, too, because they're manipulating that. They have us like mannequins jumping through all the hoops that they want from school level onwards. It's really quite frightening when you look at it that way.
Well, let's jump to the top of the hour, Michael, and we'll come back with more questions.